Hello, my friends. It's Friday, April 4th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belbel, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We've got quite the program for you today as we continue to deal with the fallout from Liberation Day as Donald Trump announced massive tariffs across the board all around the world, and we're getting some details on the thinking and math behind that, and spoiler alert, there was no thinking, and it's pretty bad math. Also, we'll give you some details on what Donald Trump is up to in the confirmation of some of his people for the United States government, as well as his production of a $5 million gold card visa for rich, presumably white people, to immigrate to this country. We've also got to look at layoffs that are happening because of DOGE and because of one very surprising source that is counseling President Trump with regard to our NSA and Cyber Command. This is kind of scary. We'll give you the details on that. The Pentagon Inspector General is going to be investigating the fallout from WikiLeaks, the use of Signal by our Department of Defense to conduct classified war planning. We'll take a look at South Korea, where their court has unanimously upheld the impeachment of their criminal president. Wow, what a concept. Then we've got a bit of a double shot in our Boycott Idaho segment to conclude the program. We'll take a look at a couple of new laws, one with respect to marijuana and the other one with respect to abortion. All of that's coming up on the Radical Russ Show today, but before we get into all of that, we've got to take a look at what's happening on the stock market, where we are recording this just before the opening bell on Friday. The Dow futures are down over 1,000 points. This follows a 1,600-point decline by the end of trading yesterday. Almost 4 points were lost on the stock market. 4 percentage points lost on the stock market yesterday, responding to those insane tariffs. And I wanted to let you know a little anecdote from yesterday. As you know, I am a hobbyist podcaster, so that means I have to support myself and make a living being useful to capitalism by fetching things and delivering things and driving people. I do all the little gig apps. And I was out yesterday driving around and I picked up a young man taking a ride to his work. And it was pretty sad because I was driving him across the valley and the ride itself had to have cost him $50, just judging by what I was making off of it. So here's this guy, young man, Gen Z, making his way across the valley to his job, which is another type of gig work job. He's doing door-to-door knocking for a solar panel company. So he's kind of doing door-to-door salesman work. And he was talking to me all about it in the car during the ride and explaining how he's going to make, you know, anywhere from $100 to $200 a day. And I was just sitting there doing the math in my head. It's like, wow, you're spending $50 to go across the valley to a job that might pay you $100. And then you're going to have to find a way to get back across the valley for another $50. You're just going to break even in this job unless you do a really good job and make more than $100. And as I'm talking to the guy and he's lamenting how hard it is to get a job and how tough it is out there for him, he said something to the effect of, well, now that Trump's in, I'm sure hoping we'll get more jobs. Oh, my sweet summer child, I feel so terrible for you. And of course, while I'm at work, I don't go into politics mode, so I just kind of nodded. But it's just so sad that there's so many young men out there like that, desperate for employment, desperate for a better life, unable to see a world where not only they can't buy a house, but this poor guy can't even get himself into a car. It's just sad. All right, there's the opening bell for the Dow Jones, and indeed, the Dow has opened about 1,000 points lower. It is trading at below 40,000. We first hit the 40,000 mark in May of last year, and now we are down below that. Are we tired of all the winning yet? Couple of quick stories to get to here before we dig deep into the funny tariff math. As you know, four of our U.S. soldiers were killed in Lithuania during a training exercise, and their bodies were flown back to our Air Force base here in America. And the standard operating procedure for the commander-in-chief in such circumstances is to be there for the arrival of our fallen soldiers to provide them their respect due for their sacrifice to this country. Well, you know, Donald Trump isn't going to do anything of that sort. Trump skipped out on meeting our soldiers as they returned for their final trip to be buried, to be cared for by their loved ones. Instead, Donald Trump made his way out to play golf again for the 10th weekend out of 11 of this second term of his presidency. But not before he had time to unveil his new $5 million gold card visa. And folks, literally, it's gold. He literally put together an actual card that's got his face on it, all embossed in gold, so that oligarchs from all around the world, probably the white parts, can buy this $5 million visa and get all of the privileges of being citizens of the United States, living in the United States with his $5 million bribe. So sad, so pathetic, so disrespectful to our fallen soldiers. Other quick news to update you on: in the U.S. Senate, in a completely partisan fashion, so good on every Democrat for boycotting this guy, the Senate has confirmed quack Dr. Oz to be the head of Medicare and Medicaid. That's right, Dr. Oz, who came up through the Oprah Winfrey show, thanks a lot for that, Oprah, has been confirmed. We can remember that Oz, on his television program during the COVID-19 pandemic, was promoting malaria drugs, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, to treat COVID-19, which was completely debunked, but picked up by Donald Trump and others and spread for months throughout the conservative media ecosphere. How many people lost their lives or had severe complications because of that? Also, Oz has been known to promote all sorts of quack snake oil remedies, medical treatments not backed by experts, such as a combination of pregnancy hormones and a 500 calorie diet to spur weight loss. We'll all remember, of course, he ran for Senate for Pennsylvania and was defeated by John Fetterman. So what's going on there? We ended up with both Fetterman and Oz in our government. How did we get so lucky? All right, before we start the segment, let's take another quick look at the Dow Jones, which is now down 1,100 points, trading at around 39,400, a decline of 2.7%. Winning! Of course, this has all been generated by Trump's tariff palooza, the Liberation Day tariffs that were announced yesterday and quickly, roundly criticized by economists, mathematicians, and anyone with common sense or historical knowledge of the past two times in history we tried across-the-board global tariffs and crashed the world economy. Everyone pointed out that as Trump was naming these things reciprocal tariffs, as if we were tariffing these countries back the amounts that they were tariffing us, it was quickly discovered, and I pointed this out yesterday, that Trump is using some funny math here. Namely, he did not calculate a reciprocal tariff. What he calculated was a trade deficit ratio. All this math is doing is taking the trade deficit and dividing it by the imports. So we have a situation where if we buy very little, if we buy a whole lot of stuff from a country and they buy very little from us, they get a much higher tariff. such as the case with the country of Lesotho, which is entirely encompassed by South Africa. This is a garment-producing country, a lot of textiles manufacturing going on there. They got hit with a 50% tariff, which is going to take this impoverished nation and plunge it into deeper poverty as fewer companies are going to be able to afford goods coming out of Lesotho. So yesterday I tried to tell a little story to explain the idiocy of this tariff math, but let me try again with another example, because it's all predicated on this idea that a trade deficit is somehow a bad thing. That if you have a trade deficit, as Trump would say, you're getting screwed over, you're getting taken advantage of, the likes of which no one has ever seen. But in fact, a trade deficit just says that you bought more from someone than they bought from you. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, imagine that you're having to build a house, right? You're building a house, and so you need some building materials. So you go to Home Depot, and you buy $100 worth of building materials. While you're there, the clerk at Home Depot notices that you've got a button on, says, ask me about Girl Scout cookies. You got a daughter, she's selling Girl Scout cookies. So the clerk asks and says, yeah, we're selling Girl Scout cookies. And clerk says, well, that's great, man. I'd like to take a couple boxes. Here's $10. So, in that scenario where you went and spent $100 at the Home Depot, and then the clerk at the Home Depot spent $10 on your Girl Scout cookies, Trump would say you have a $90 trade deficit. Somehow Home Depot is screwing you over because they didn't buy $100 worth of cookies from you. Well, in the scenario that I'm making up here, everybody's satisfied. You've got to have the Home Depot materials to build your house. You're not upset about anything. Home Depot was the place you had to go buy them. Home Depot sold them at a price you wanted. You got your $100 of materials. And likewise, the clerk can't eat $100 worth of cookies. The clerk's not got a desire for $100 worth of cookies. Hell, the clerk didn't even know there was any cookies for sale or had any idea he wanted to buy any cookies until he saw the button on your lapel from you coming in and buying stuff from the Home Depot. So the trade deficit in this scenario is just a difference in how much each side spent with the other. In Trump's feeble little mind, that needs to be modified so that each side buys as much from the other as the other bought from them. He wants Home Depot to spend $100 on cookies, or for you to only spend $10 on the building materials. And that's where that tariff math comes in. The tariff math in that scenario was, well, you got a $90 trade deficit, right, with the Home Depot, and you bought $100 worth of stuff from the Home Depot. So 90 divided by 100 is 0.9, or 90%. And so now we got to put a 90% tariff on Home Depot. Oh, except in Trump's case, they cut it in half, you know, to be kind. So it'd be a 45% tariff on Home Depot. That's how he came up with this stuff, folks. Literally, take the trade deficit and divide it by the imports. It's funny math. But when called out on it, the White House went and put out a formula. And this was for anybody who's ever done any sort of algebra in high school. Was funny as hell, because they dressed it up with a bunch of Greek letters. The delta of I minus the import of tau. They put a bunch of Greek letters on it. And in the formula, they pointed out that the tariff would be equal to, and on the top part, you know, of the fraction, the imports minus exports, or otherwise the trade deficit, right? And on the bottom part, they had the imports as the divisor, you know, the denominator, but they added two more things to be multiplied in. And they signified them with Greek letters. The first one was, we have to figure in the price elasticity of import demand. And we'll multiply that in to the import figure. And then we've also got to figure out the elasticity of import prices. And we've got to multiply that into the import figure. Okay, so our divisor at the bottom is the price elasticity of import demand times the elasticity of import prices times the total imports. And that's our new complex formula. But in setting up the formula, they give you what the values are, that are the values that are assumed for price elasticity of import demand and the elasticity of import prices. These two new little Greek letters they added to their formula. The value for the first little Greek letter is 4. The value for the second Greek letter is 0.25. So for the divisor here, they are multiplying the imports times 4 times 0.25. Are you getting it yet? Doing the math in your head? And you're realizing that, wait a minute, 4 times 0.25 is 1. And anything times 1 is itself. In other words, in this fancy new formula, they added two new Greek letters that just cancel each other out so that they didn't even need to be there in the first place. And once again, the formula is still trade deficit divided by imports. But there's another aspect to this funny math and this tariff palooza we need to talk about. And that is the fact that Trump is using these not as some way to balance trade or help the American companies that are importing or exporting. No, 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 no. This is all about extortive power. This is all about mob boss mentality. For if Trump sets all these massively high tariffs on all these countries and all these products and all these industries, it's only a matter of time before the president of this country or the CEO of that company goes with hat in hand to the White House saying, oh, please, dear, wise, and benevolent leader, oh, powerful and strong Trump, won't you please carve out an exception for our country? Won't you please carve out an exception for our industry? And in exchange, we will give you, and whatever it is he particularly wants from those people. That's exactly what this is all about. This is the strong arm of the tariff being used as the sword of Damocles, hanging over any country or industry that he alone can remove, that he alone can ameliorate, so that they will curry favor with him. That's what this is all about. Everything Trump does relates to amassing power. And everything about Trump amassing power is about him keeping his depends-sotted ass out of a federal prison or a state prison. Donald Trump is in the classic dictator scenario, as explained to us by Professor Timothy Snyder. He must die holding power in office, or he will die in a prison. But the Congress can stop this at any time. First of all, the tariff powers are Congress's. They have been delegated to the president over years through a series of acts and emergency declarations that allow the president and the executive to move quickly in creating and removing tariffs. Well, now that the markets are free-falling, some of these senators are starting to realize it's time to claw back that power. And credit where credit is due, I have to give a shout out to the oldest member of the United States Senator, nonagenarian Chuck Grassley, who's been in elected office since 1959. Chuck Grassley from Iowa, the Republican, and Maria Cantwell, the Democrat from Washington, have put forth a bill requiring a 48-hour notice of the announcement of any new tariffs, a 60-day window in which Congress must approve those tariffs, and the power for Congress to end any tariff at any time. So, we've got a Republican sponsor in the Senate starting to realize that this has gone too far. The chance this gets out of the Senate and passes in the House is slim to none, given that the House is almost completely controlled by the MAGA faction, but it is a beginning of some cracks in Donald Trump's GOP support. We also saw Senators Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins join together with the Democrats in voting for a resolution to end the declaration of an emergency with Canada to try to claw back some of those tariffs that are happening against Canada. So it's starting to happen. The market is starting to force the hand of some of these senators. Let's hope that this momentum builds and the Congress can reassert its authority over our economic policy. Checking in again with the Dow Jones live here as I record on a Friday morning. Still down about 1,100 points or 2.7%, trading at around 39,400. Part, of course, of what is affecting our markets and affecting our economy are these massive amount of layoffs that have been happening thanks to Elon Musk and Doge, the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. And the announcement came this week that there were 275,000 layoffs in the United States of America this month, the worst number of layoffs since the COVID-19 pandemic. And among people that were laid off, the entire staff of LIHEAP, the Low Income Heating Program, that services about 6.2 million Americans who rely on this subsidy to help pay for high heating costs. Just as we're approaching spring, people are not going to be paying much attention to this at this point, but boy, once we get toward the winter, and those heating oil costs will rise, and all of these costs are going to rise thanks to this terrible tariff regime that we are under. We're going to see people dying. We're going to see people freezing to death in their homes because of these policy decisions. Speaking of homes, the Veterans Administration also announced the ending of the Mortgage Rescue Plan for our military service members. Sometimes, you know, people get into mortgages and then they get deployed or relocated and it causes all sorts of economic hardship. This program has been around to help soldiers from losing their homes. It has rescued over 17,000 homes from our service members, from losing them to bankruptcy or foreclosure, and the VA has ended that rescue plan. So much for support the troops, huh? Speaking of the troops, General Tim Hough, I hope that's how his name is pronounced, it's H-A-U-G-H. General Tim Hough, four-star general who is the head of our National Security Agency and, most importantly, the U.S. Cyber Command, has been fired. And it's not so shocking that he's been fired. Lots of people have been fired lately. It's word coming down on who got him fired, which is the right-wing provocateur Laura Loomer. You remember this wacko, the one who chained herself to the Twitter offices? Yeah, Laura Loomer apparently called for the firing of our number one military general heading up our cyber command, our defense against cyber warfare, the hackers from North Korea, from China, from all over the world who are trying to disrupt our American way of life. Fired, gone, because Laura Loomer wanted him gone. And let's not forget that Pete Hegseth, our DUI hire, the Secretary of Defense, who is using chat to discuss private war plans, that guy, yes, Pete Hegseth, the former Fox News host, has already gotten the United States Cyber Command to stand down on any war games planning with respect to cyber attacks from Russia. So, cyber attacks from Russia are going unplanned for, and we're sacking the head of the NSA and U.S. Cyber Command. Makes you think somebody's got something planned, doesn't it? Also on the list of firings, the infertility research team at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's right. You remember how Donald Trump is always bragging he's going to be the fertility president. He's all about the fertility. He wants the fertility to happen. Let's have more babies. Fertility, fertility, fertility. And yet, for people who are infertile, he's going to cancel the research team that would help them out. Donald Trump is not pro-family. Donald Trump is not pro-fertility. Donald Trump is pro-power and whatever it takes for him to maintain power. The markets continue to tumble on Friday morning trading. Dow Jones still down about 1,000. S&P 500 down about 150. NASDAQ down over 500. All these markets down about 2.5 to 3%. So much winning. But we are winning in one respect. We were talking about Pete Hegseth a second ago, the Secretary of Defense, the DUI hire, is now being investigated. The Pentagon's Inspector General has announced an investigation into the use of the text app Signal for delivering and disseminating classified war attack battle plans. So some investigation of WikiLeaks is happening, and the surprising thing to me was we still have inspectors general at the Pentagon? I thought they fired all the inspectors general. They must have missed this one. As other things that need to be investigated also include this deportation that we are doing to our concentration camps in El Salvador. We still have Kilmar Abrego Garcia being held, an innocent man being held, and more details on this than what I told you yesterday. I told you how the courts had already adjudicated that he was not to be deported. That's because he was an asylum seeker. Mr. Abrego Garcia was in grave danger of being tortured and killed if he was ever returned to El Salvador. So the U.S. courts specifically outlined that he was not to be returned to El Salvador because of that very danger. And of course, that's where he is right now, held without rights, without due process. And our government throwing up their hands and saying, oh, well, nothing we can do. He's in El Salvador now. Yeah, nothing we can do. We have a contract with El Salvador to house all these Venezuelans with tattoos who may or may not be gang members, but we really don't know because they were never given any due process in the first place. I'm sure that if we called that contract into question, if we started to pull some of the funding, they'd send Mr. Abrego Garcia back to us in a second. You can bet if Mr. Abrego Garcia's last name was Bush or Trump, he'd be being sent back this second. And he's not the only person that's being abused because of this roundup. The PhD student, Rumeysa Ozturk, who was abducted from Tufts University because she wrote an op-ed. She expressed an opinion that the government found distasteful. They decided that because she thought it was bad that Palestinian people are being wiped out in Gaza, that bombs are falling on children, that people are being starved as a weapon of war, because she thought that was bad. She apparently is a terrorist sympathizer. You can't have any empathy for the Palestinian people without being a terrorist sympathizer in the eyes of Donald Trump and his maladministration. So she was abducted off the streets, disappeared to one of the Louisiana black sites. And the reports are coming out now that while she's been in custody, she has had 3 asthma attacks. She suffers from asthma and has not been given access to her inhaler or any other medications to treat this. So we are risking this woman's life dying behind bars of an asthma attack because she wrote an op-ed. This is what we've become in America. We are the country that disappears people for their political opinions. We disappear the dissidents. We throw them into gulags, torture prisons, work camps, our bite mocked fry. We're no longer the shining city on the hill. We're the embarrassment of the Western Hemisphere. I've never been ashamed to be an American like I'm ashamed to be an American right now. We have some great news coming from South Korea, where its Supreme Court has decided unanimously to uphold the impeachment and removal from office of President Yoon Suk-yeol, who declared martial law on December 3rd as part of a coup attempt. He was elected back in 2022, and from that point on, behaved in a very Trumpian fashion. He began with crackdowns on what he called the fake news, reporting on his malfeasance. There was an investigation that he vetoed that had to do with the death of a Marine during his administration that was under some mysterious circumstances, and the investigation was ordered by the legislature, passing a law saying it needed to be investigated. And Yoon vetoed that investigation in a cover-up attempt. His wife was also caught on camera taking emoluments, taking an expensive purse as a gift. So a lot of Trumpian notes being played there in the administration of Yoon Suk-yeol. Like I said, he imposed martial law on December 3rd and banned political activities as part of his insurrection. He ordered the military to break down the doors of the legislature and drag out the lawmakers. They moved quickly to impeach him, and as we said, this impeachment has now been unanimously upheld. Yoon Suk-yeol is removed from office and faces trial, in which he could be convicted and serve time in prison. What a fantastic idea. Holding elected leaders to account. Wow. Putting criminal charges against them and then moving swiftly to prosecute them. It's quite the concept. I hope Merrick Garland is taking some notes here, because this isn't the first time South Korea has had to do such a thing. They had another president, Park Geun-hye. I'm sorry about the pronunciations. I'm terrible at Korean. But President Park was convicted of bribery in 2016 and put into jail. Now, she was given a 20-year sentence, but was pardoned in 2021. So, yeah, apparently, other countries out there hold their elected leaders to account in their criminal justice system and act swiftly to ensure that justice is served. What a fantastic idea. One other quick note on the progress fighting against Orange Cheeto Mussolini. We've got news that 19 states, this is the Democratic Attorneys General from Arizona, California, Connecticut, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Wisconsin. These 19 Democratic Attorneys General have filed a fourth legal challenge against the executive order that Trump issued recently on voting, saying that it is an unconstitutional attempt to seize control of elections that will create barriers to voting that could disenfranchise millions. New York Attorney General Letitia James said in a statement, quote, "We are a democracy, not a monarchy, and this executive order is an authoritarian power grab. With this order, the president is prioritizing his own quest for unchecked power above the rights and will of the public," end quote. This was the executive order that Trump put out on March 25th that threatens the states if they do not comply with his wishes. And his wishes specifically are to have the states verify the immigration status of any voter. He's directing the Election Assistance Commission, which is an independent bipartisan body, to rewrite the federal voter registration form to require the copy of proof of citizenship to vote in federal races. It also would ban the counting of any ballots that arrive in the mail after Election Day even if they were postmarked before Election Day. 18 states currently allow that. If you got your ballot in the mail in time, but the mail was slow because, oh, I don't know, the Postmaster General went and got rid of all the mail sorting machines in your area. Something like that happens and your ballot arrives late, your vote still counts. Donald Trump wants people to be disenfranchised because the mail is late. Not because the voter is late, but because the mail is late. Now, in their lawsuit, these attorneys general are arguing that the president cannot make these changes. It's up to states and congresses to decide how elections should be run. And it points out that the president cannot direct the Election Assistance Commission to do anything because it's an independent body. Furthermore, adding a proof of citizenship requirement on the federal registration form conflicts with existing federal law. The lawsuit says the executive order sows confusion and sets the stage for chaos, since the states will have to divert staff and resources toward implementing new training, new testing, new voter education, and coordination at a breakneck pace to comply with the order, or they would risk losing their much-needed federal funds. There are three other federal lawsuits assigned to this case, and they're all headed to the U.S. District Court Judge Colleen Kolar-Cotelli, who ordered that the three suits will be consolidated and proceed together. Two of those suits were brought by Voting Rights Group, and another was brought by election attorney Mark Elias. All of this, of course, is to fulfill Trump's little fantasy that somehow Democrats are bussing in illegal immigrants to vote in elections and throw those elections to Democrats, despite the fact that there is no evidence that such a thing is happening. And in fact, when we do audits of election, we find the cases of non-citizens voting are incredibly rare. Why? Because when you try to register to vote, you're breaking the law. And if caught, you can face prison time and deportation. It is so very rare as to be a statistical nullity. Of course, that doesn't stop the MAGAs in the U.S. Congress from promoting the big lie. U.S. Senator Mike Lee from Utah says, quote, "Why are top Democrats suing to allow non-citizens to vote in American elections? You know why." And of course, Elon Musk retweets that and adds the word fraud. Democrats are not suing to allow non-citizens to vote because, number one, non-citizens don't vote. And number two, it's already illegal. The other thing that's troubling about this is that more than 21 million American adults do not have a proof of citizenship document like their birth certificate or their passport, or they don't have easy access to such a thing. And the Trump executive order only names a few ways you can prove citizenship: a passport, a military ID that states citizenship, or a government photo ID that lists citizenship. That's the real ID that we're talking about, and not every state offers that. It's also unclear whether or not a birth certificate would actually qualify because Trump didn't actually name that in the executive order. And only about half of Americans have a passport. So in this attempt to try to stop the so-called plague of illegal aliens voting in our election, you'd really be disenfranchising a lot of American citizens as well who do not have access to those types of documents. Time once again for our Boycott Idaho segment, where we remind you the various reasons why you should boycott the handmade state. Avoid the handmade state and its most popular product, the potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. So substitute some onion rings for those fries. Get yourself a salad rather than a loaded baked potato. It's time to show one red state that the rest of us are not going to support their backward ways any longer. Boycott Idaho, avoid the handmaid state. And the reason today is twofold. I've actually got a twofer for you in our Boycott Idaho segment. Let's start with the first reason to boycott Idaho, and that is the passage of a new law. So I've told you in the past that the Idaho legislature hates marijuana. Oregon went and legalized marijuana for medical use, at least, in 1998. Ever since then, the legislators have feared that the big money out-of-state marijuana legalizers would descend upon Idaho and use the citizen initiative process to unleash the devil's lettuce across the gem state. Because, you know, nobody ever grows it, sells it, and smokes it within Idaho. It would have to come from out-of-state. Wink. So by the early 2010s, the border town of Ontario, birthplace of the tater tot, had become home to the 45th Parallel, which was a gray market medical dispensary providing medical cannabis to registered patients. It was raided and its operators jailed in 2012. And of course, much of that marijuana was finding its way into the state of Idaho. Fast forward to 2014, Oregon legalized marijuana for recreational purposes. And originally, the initiative that we passed, Measure 91, provided that marijuana sales would be legal throughout the state of Oregon, with the ability of cities and counties to opt out by a vote of the people. You don't want pot shops in your town, you could run a vote to ban them. But the legislators on the eastern side of the state rebelled against this. They complained that, well, we already voted that we didn't want marijuana. Why should we have to vote again that we don't want marijuana? You have to understand the political layout of Oregon is west of the Cascade Mountains, the coastal side of Oregon. That's the blue part. And not even all the coastal side. I'm on the southern part that's still pretty red. So pretty much from Eugene, Oregon, where the University of Oregon is housed, the Oregon Ducks, northward to Portland, that section of northwestern side of Oregon is the Democratic blue side. Everywhere else in Oregon is red state, especially east of the Cascades, the eastern Oregon portion. So all those legislators rebelled because all of their counties in eastern Oregon voted against Measure 91 legalization. So they got a special law passed in the 2014 session that said that any county, I'm sorry, the 2015 session should have been, that any county that voted more than 55% against the statewide legalization initiative automatically starts with a ban on pot sales. And then there's an opt-in vote if you want to allow them. So despite the fact that we passed a statewide initiative saying pot should be legal for sale statewide, the legislature went and monkeyed with it so that we had a two-state solution, if you will. We had a situation where the western side of the state, the counties that voted for legalization, had legal pot shops, and the eastern side of the state that voted against legalization did not. And that's the way it was for a few years. This banned the sales in all the counties that rejected the statewide legalization, and so pot shops remained over 200 miles away from the Oregon border until 2017. That was when a little town in eastern Oregon that's just 30 miles away from the border passed a local initiative to allow pot shops. This town was called Huntington, and it was a dying little town of a few hundred people that had been situated on a highway, but now was bypassed by Interstate 84. So it was just kind of withering on the vine there. And Interstate 84, by the way, that's the main freeway that goes from Boise to Portland. So, within a few weeks, Huntington was the home to three legal marijuana shops and a constant flow of customers from Boise coming down I-84, bearing those Idaho license plates, and it was starting to get write-ups in national newspapers. I believe the New York Times even did a write-up on how Huntington was a boom town because of legal marijuana. And understand the incentive structure behind that is that a city, see, marijuana in Oregon is taxed at 20%, with 17% of that going to the state and 3% going to the city or county that is allowing it. And partial amounts of that 17% that goes statewide then get redistributed back to the places that allow for marijuana. So there's quite a financial incentive for these little towns to allow for pot shops. And it saved Huntington. It brought businesses back from the brink. Well, by 2019, the border town of Ontario was looking at passing this because Ontario was also one of these little rural towns that were dying. It's about 11,000 people, and their economic base largely around an Orida plant there that makes tater tots. Like I said, it's the birthplace of the tater tot. But they were finding it so hard to raise revenues that they were actually floating the idea of passing a city sales tax in Ontario. Now, I got to explain something to you if you're not from Oregon. Oregon has no state sales tax, and Oregonians feel that down to their bones. Proposing a sales tax in the state of Oregon, you might as well be proposing legalized pedophilia. It is so unpopular. Nobody supports sales taxes. And so Ontario tried it. They tried to put a 1% sales tax on the ballot, and it failed miserably. So the city fathers are looking out, and they see Huntington out there, just 30 miles away, raking in that 3% tax. Soon enough, activists, including my lady love, Lori Duckworth, put together a city initiative to overturn the pot shop ban, and it passed by a wide margin. So in 2019, the border town of Ontario opens up for legal pot shops, and as of today, there are a dozen dispensaries doing about $8 million in sales every month. That $8 million in monthly sales with 3% tax that returns directly to the city of Ontario means the city of Ontario makes about $250,000 every month on legal marijuana sales. And of course, those sales, 90% of them are going to Idahoans. That's right. The city of Ontario, that's 11,000 people, and the only city in Malheur County, which is a county of 30,000 people, does $8 million of marijuana business per month. And that county regularly ranks as the third greatest marijuana sales county in the entire state of Oregon. It only trails the two urban counties that make up Portland. Ontario is Idaho's marijuana capital. So, because of the legal pot sales going on in Ontario and in Huntington before that, the companies that run the pot shops there have been keen on running advertisements in the state of Idaho, a series of billboards saying that marijuana is legal. Come on over here for legal marijuana. We've got a pot shop over on such and such street. Well, that is no more, because on April 1st, Governor Brad Little signed House Bill 271, which makes a misdemeanor out of advertising any drug that is illegal in the state of Idaho, punishable by a $500 per day fine. Now, you may not have heard of this because it didn't generate any fanfare in the media. I could not find a single story about it on a Google News search. And maybe that makes sense because there's probably no shock in the idea of a state in which marijuana is illegal making it illegal to advertise marijuana. Even though the advertisement is enticing someone to use the drug where it is legal. Now, a consequence of this is the hit that it will deliver to activists working to change Idaho's marijuana laws. For instance, the Boise Hemp Fest is an annual public festival to educate the public on cannabis as medicine and marijuana law reform. It has been deriving much support from those dispensaries through their advertising at the event. Now, the Senate did make a change to the original House bill. In the original House bill, they weren't putting a ban on advertising drugs, illegal drugs. They were putting a bill forth that would have banned advertising illegal products and services. Oh, can you imagine the uproar if Planned Parenthood couldn't distribute pamphlets for legal abortion health care just over the border in Oregon, Washington, Nevada, and Montana? Can you imagine the uproar if FanDuel, DraftKings, and BetMGM, as well as various out-of-state casinos, weren't allowed to advertise the gambling services they provide that are illegal in the state of Idaho? That's right. You're still allowed to advertise illegal gambling. You're still allowed to advertise illegal abortion, things that are not legal in the state of Idaho. You're still allowed to advertise them, but not a legal pot shop over the border. All right, before we wrap things up with the radical rant, let's take a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is now down 1,400 points, or 3.5%. Second day in a row, we've dropped about 3.5% to 4%. You remember that tweet from Donald Trump when he said, if the stock market drops more than 1,000 points in 2 days, the president ought to be impeached? Gosh, what should we do to the president when the stock market drops over 1,500 points a day for 2 days in a row? The Dow is currently trading at 39,140. It's possible the Dow could drop below 38,000. Remember the good old days when Joe Biden had the stock market up to 45,000? Say, folks, how's your 401k these days? I promised you a twofer when it came to the state of Idaho, and that's the subject of today's radical rant with a new bill that has been passed, SB 1046. And this is a bill that's been championed by the religious anti-abortion activists that requires the presentation of fetal development videos produced by the anti-abortion group Live Action. They're going to force these videos to be shown in public schools to Idaho students, these videos that are allegedly scientifically and medically accurate, but are constructed of computerized animations that provide a far more sanitized and human-looking sort of fetus than what you'd really find if you were to look through endoscopy. But these are videos that are produced by the anti-abortion group Live Action. They're going to be shown to public school students beginning in the fifth grade and presented every year until graduation. According to their website, quote, Live Action exists today to shift public opinion against abortion. And the content that they will be forcing 9- and 10-year-olds in public school to watch has been rated as 43% surveyed say Live Action's content has changed their position against abortion, and that their content exposes the abortion industry's exploitation of women and families for profit. Idaho is the third state now in which Live Action has managed to get this passed. I believe the other two are Kentucky and North Dakota, that are going to force these anti-abortion propaganda videos upon 9 and 10-year-olds. Now look, there's nothing wrong in theory with presenting the biological facts of human fetal development in a high school biology course. But you present these highly stylized animations produced by anti-abortion activists every year from fifth grade on is clearly promoting an anti-abortion agenda. Especially when you compare this with Idaho laws that regard sex education in schools and require that, quote, any program in family life and sex education is to be introduced in the schools is a matter for determination at the local school district level by the local school board. So the governor and the legislature have gone against what Idaho law already provides for local control, local school district control of sex education. They've bypassed that entirely and made a statewide mandate for a politically biased video to be shown to school children. Sex education in Idaho, according to statute, also mandates that teens be taught, quote, the power of the sex drive and the necessity of controlling that drive by self-discipline. In other words, abstinence education. And they're required to be taught about adoption resources and current adoption practices in a sex education class. So once again, state of Idaho trying to inculcate its minors into an anti-abortion position by showing them propaganda videos from anti-abortion activists that purport to detail fetal development and development of organs and such. This is all about their push to try to convince people that fetuses have hearts at 18 days. I've seen that billboard around in Oregon, even, of fetal heartbeat in 18 days, pro-life Oregon. There is no heart at 18 days. There are heart muscle cells that start to pulse at 18 days, but nothing resembling a heart at 18 days. So here's the state of Idaho forcing 9 and 10-year-old kids to watch these videos that show them the unborn baby in the womb to get them to feel that abortion is murder, and then teaching them sex education that emphasizes abstinence. And then when those kids do end up getting pregnant, they have no abortion access. They can die in a parking lot from sepsis or a miscarriage because the doctors are afraid to treat them for fear of running athwart the abortion ban, where pregnant girls, pregnant 13-year-old girls, are denied any sort of treatment until given parental permission. A state where if a kid is raped by their father and impregnated, she can't get any abortion health care without first reporting that rape to police and then getting her rapist's permission to administer a rape kit to prove it. Idaho, you're not pro-life. You're not pro-child. You're pro-forced birth slavery. Well, folks, that's all the time I've got for today. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons Sharealike Licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. Before we go, let's make one last check at the Dow Jones at 7:44 Pacific time, sitting at 39,120, down 1,425 points. Boy, I know if they keep at it, maybe they can be below 38. They'll be in the 38s by the end of the day, mark my words. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to @RadicalRuss on Venmo, RadRuss on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. And we're down 1,500 points. And there it is at 7:46 a.m. Pacific time. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped below 39,000 points. Talk to you next week. Oh.
you take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it.